Keys with a Brattle.
When people think YouTube and guitar, a name near the top of the list is that of Michael Palmisano. When I decided to dedicate a lot of my own free time during the pandemic to a daily practice of improving my skills on guitar, one of the first musical education channels I found on YouTube was Michael's. And while he's best known for his Guitar Teacher Reacts videos and his GuitarGate guitar course program, Michael has also been called to sit in with bands like Humphreys McGee. He's also performed at clinics, such as GitCon, with other legendary guitarists such as Phil X, guitarist for Bon Jovi, or even Mike Bradley, who's performed with Blondie. Through all of his success with his GuitarGate guitar course program and his YouTube channel, which has reached over 300,000 subscribers and counting, Michael remains one of the most approachable, enthusiastic, and eager to help musicians I've ever known. In our time together for Unlocking the Keys, Michael and I talked not just about guitar, but music as a whole, and he had some really insightful things to say about keyboards, in addition to giving the whole story of how he found himself on stage after the ebb of the pandemic with one of the most successful touring groups in the jam band scene, Humphreys McGee. Hope you enjoy, and please follow Unlocking the Keys wherever you hear podcasts for more episodes just like this, in addition to finding me, Link Bradham, on social media. And now, let's unlock the keys together, with Michael Palmisano as our guest. Hello, hello, there he is.
What's up, brother?
Not much, man. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm doing okay. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I've made the move down to my new space with all of my stuff for my podcast, my YouTube productions, where I can track instruments. It's like almost like a music studio here. It's pretty great.
Yeah, man, I like the all the different keys you have back there behind you, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah, for those who can't see, listeners who can't see, I am in my new musical space, what used to be an office space in the house, but one of the old roommates moved out, and so now it's my music production space, and I've got a lot of keyboards, even guitars and basses and things behind me. If you even see in the logo of the show, I've got, you know, the Wurlitzer behind me. It's a great space, and I'm happy to be here. But I think what I'm happiest most about today is being here with our guest, Mr. Michael Palmisano, who is just an absolutely incredibly enthusiastic individual. I think that's what's most exciting having you here, Michael, is just when we watch either your YouTube videos or your GuitarGate program, guitar courses, your undying enthusiasm for music just always shines through. And so I'm really, really grateful to have you here. And glad to hear that things are going well, and just want to say thank you so much for being here today.
Man, it is absolutely my pleasure. I remember when you first emailed me when I first get in the barn together, and you wanted to get involved and offered a bunch of gear, and it's just been a treat. You know, this whole YouTube thing has really, like you said, brought together a lot of really passionate musicians, people that are just really, really into it, you know, moved by it. And, you know, those tend to be really, really just good people. And I'm just super appreciative that you reached out and that, you know, the internet is kind of, even though we know each other virtually, like we're just, you know, becoming close and getting to know each other. And it's all because of the music. I just love it.
I mean, it's just amazing, man. I mean, even 10, 15 years ago, this might not have been as possible for people to just connect the way that we are via the internet. I mean, sure, video chat's been around for a while, but now, you know, with Zoom and things, it's just, it's so quick, and happens so, So amazingly, I mean, you even think about like a band, like we'll come back to it later in the podcast, but a band reaching out to you just because of your YouTube videos and having you actually come out on stage with them. And it's really amazing because, you know, I think about maybe when I was a kid and before DVDs were even really big, my dad would bring home VHS tapes because there used to be this whole like community of people who would share like, you know, bootleg VHS tapes and be like, dude, check out the cool Deep Purple footage from 1977 that I got today. And we'd get excited and watch it. But now this stuff is just at our fingertips. And I'm curious, for someone like you who seems to really be trailblazing this internet presence, how did you get your start with all of this?
Sure. I mean, my story is an interesting one. I started playing when I was very, very young. I don't remember not playing, and no one in my family played, so I didn't have that thing like your dad would bring tapes to you. But eventually, I mustered up the courage to go to GIT out in California, which is like a music tech school. And you go there when you want to, be a hired gun and be hired to work professionally. So it's not a conservatory by any stretch of the imagination. It's a performance-based school. And when I went there, maybe 2004 or so, and the ripples in the pond that Napster had started in the late 90s to destroy the record industry were beginning to turn into waves. And by the time I graduated, iTunes and YouTube had came out and the bottom was gone. It was officially over. To put that into context, when I first got to GIT, I would say about the top 100 people in the school that graduated every year got real professional work. And the year that I graduated, and only a few years had passed, it was like five. And it was obviously the top five, and I obviously wasn't one of them. And so a whole string of things happened, but I eventually ended up back home in Maryland and started teaching and playing gigs locally. And I fell in love with teaching. I absolutely found my voice. I found my passion. I felt that I could see myself making a difference every day. And I felt that even though I knew I was a good guitar player, I was perhaps even a better communicator and teacher, because it was so hard for me to learn how to play that once I felt very confident in explaining things, it was very clear like what the things are that are important and how to portray them. It was very obvious to me because it was such a struggle. So I did that for about 7 or 8 years. And then I got married and we started having kids. And in the early 2010s, 2011, 12, I started seeing your early adopters like Marty Schwartz and Justin Sanderko your Scott Devine's on bass and Mike's drum lessons. People start to begin to make a living on the internet teaching. And I knew at that very moment that I had to do that because I had completely scaled out. I had been doing 50 or 60 students a week for 7 years. I had a 6-month waiting list. I was doing 110, 120 shows a year, all local wedding and corporate stuff because it paid the most, doing cover band work. And my wife was a special ed teacher. And so I knew we were completely and absolutely at our ceiling. And you know how it is as an artist. If you think you can do something, it's not that you just do it. It's just that you can't not do it. You know, the fulfillment of potential is what drives you. And you look in the mirror when you know you haven't been doing what you know you should be doing, you eat yourself alive. And so after a fair amount of procrastination, in 2013, I dove in and went online and filmed my whole first course. And it was very, very difficult. It was very, very hard. I lost money for about 2 years, had to keep gigging and teaching and my wife teaching, and we had another child, but eventually if you just commit to not quitting, you can figure out how to make anything work for you wherever you are in your life and whatever time you're alive, right? If you just don't stop, you'll eventually figure out how to make it work for you. And it works differently for everyone. So that happened to me around 2015, almost 2016. Got pretty settled in, found some success selling courses, and eventually stopped teaching in person, and then eventually quit the band around late 2018. And so then I've been full-time since 2018, not doing anything else, just supporting my family strictly with making courses, guitar courses for the internet. Now, I say all that to say that around mid-2019, I started getting really burnt out. It had been, I don't know, what is that, 6 years, 7 years of the grind and just a really large struggle, followed by, I would call it some decent success. And I, throughout this whole process, had been making YouTubes and videos, and I made hundreds of YouTube videos, and none of them ever had any traction and worked at all. None of them did anything. I got students by Facebook ads and Udemy and a bunch of other ways. So, yeah, YouTube was very, 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 very frustrating. And so I actually took a break from playing in 2019 and making YouTube videos for a few months, 3 or 4 months or so. And then something crazy happened. I was taken to a Dead & Company show by some friends of mine, and I was very intrigued because I was aware of John Mayer, but I wasn't like a huge fan, but I had seen him before and dug his power trio stuff and everything. But I was very intrigued by somebody who at that level, who you know, hires a band, has, you know, tractor trailers following them everywhere, a staff of got to be 50 or 60 people filling out arenas, you know, being, you know, the headliner, puts all that staff and all those musicians and all that money on the shelf for 30 some dates a year to play someone else's music and be a hired gun. That's like literally unheard of. I still can't think of an example like that. And so I was like, yeah, I'm pretty curious, because I knew that the answer had to be because of the music, and I had never really gotten into the Dead. And so I went, and something happened, man. It just clicked. And I'd listened to the music so many times before. I've listened to John's music so many times before, and neither of those really clicked, but that day, that time, it just did. And I don't really know what to say about it, but I can say that most people that are fans of that music remember the time it clicked. It's an interesting phenomenon. And so then I went home and I started learning some of these tunes, and I had all my camera gear and everything like that. And I just said, you know what? I'm just going to pretend like a student is here, just like they always were. When I taught endless private lessons, they'd bring in a song, you'd have 30 minutes and you'd listen to it. You know, you'd get the broad strokes, the key takeaways, things for them to focus on when they go home. But that's pretty much all you can get in 30 minutes, because you haven't learned it before they got in the room. And so I just decided to turn the camera on and be exactly who I have been for a very long time with students. And learn it and teach it in real time, as best I could, and then just upload it, no edits, just warts and all, mistakes everywhere. And I just didn't call it a lesson, because there are mistakes everywhere. But I saw that there was this trend on YouTube called, you know, reacts, you know, people reacting to things. And I saw like vocal coaches reacting, but no one actually playing an instrument that was doing what every teacher does. And I uploaded it, called it Guitar Teacher Reacts, and it just popped. And it's been going on 2 years now. And it's, it's a really interesting phenomenon, because what it's done is, because that happened about 6 months or so before the pandemic happened. And then when the pandemic happened, I was squarely on this little rocket ship, and everybody that would normally tour, small bands, big bands, mid-sized bands, were stuck at home. Everybody was stuck at home. And all these users, all these people, these subscribers were suggesting to me that I react, listen, teach to all these different bands. And not all the bands, but some of the bands really dug it and appreciated it. Umphrey's being the number one example, completely embraced what I was doing and me as a person and a player, so much so that once the pandemic lifted, when they came through town, they invited me to come and sit in with them. So it's this strange thing where it's like, I worked so hard to like get to this spot, and then the internet pretty much like ruined the record industry along with my plans along with it. And then I like fell into teaching, went like onto the internet, and then got kind of like burnt out on it. And then this magical thing happened, and it gave me this new rebirth, which has now led to me being on stage with people that, you know, I look up to. It's this crazy phenomenon that's kind of happened.
I mean, it is. It's crazy, and it's also kind of inspiring to hear just how your journey in this has come about. It really, you know, it makes me think of something that you shared with me in our conversations together. But that idea of genuineness, that when you genuinely approach things in a way that you show your passion for whatever it is that you might be passionate about, in our case, music, people are attracted to that. And it's just, I mean, it's just such an amazing time to be alive.
It is.
And it's amazing to see your journey through all of this.
It is, man. I'm deeply, deeply grateful. It's well, you know, you're a musician. I'm sure you can relate. There are points in your life where you have, for lack of a better word, you know, shit or get off the pot moments, you know, where you get there and your faith is tested, and you have to choose whether or not to keep going, or whether this has been, you know, we've had a nice run of this, right? And I've picked the guitar up and put it down and picked it back up again about four significant times in my life, you know, one when I was going to go to college, you know, a bunch of different things. One was one when I was a kid, you know, am I actually going to go to music school? Am I actually going to do this? Am I, you know, and so the last one was, you know, back in 2019. And I was totally burnt out. And like this thing that happened, that I capitalized on, and so many people, it came to it like a magnet, has reinvigorated me and motivated me and inspired me in a way that I haven't felt in a really long time. And I'm practicing more than I have like since I was at GIT. And to be totally honest, I was never sure that I was totally going to get back to this pure place where it's just about the music, man, and not about, you know, paying bills and supporting a family or like all the other things you do when you're, you know, in a working band or teaching 40 hours a week, you know, students or running an internet business, whatever it is. It's just, I can't believe I get to be back at this place where it's just all about the music, and it's because of you. It's because of, you know, that magnetic thing you spoke about. It's I'm very, very grateful.
And it's beautiful to see how much gratitude you have through all of this. I want to come back to something that you mentioned about your own personal journey with music, which you mentioned something that I think might strike some listeners, fans of yours, myself included, as surprising, which is, you know, you talked about having a tough time learning the guitar, and that is not something that I would have expected. And you know, for any of us who have had a tough time in our instrument journey, could you talk about what kinds of things were difficult for you?
Sure. So people's natural inclinations or skills or whatever vary greatly. I was not born with a good ear for melody and harmony, but I was born with a fantastic ear for rhythm and dynamics, right? And phrasing. That came very easily, but picking out actual chords and notes, very difficult. I didn't have a teacher when I was younger that taught me theory, taught me ear training, taught me to read. It was just put your finger on this fret. This is the riff, right? And not even like key, not even like chord function, just like, you know, that was the thing. And so when I went to GIT, when I wanted to go, I had to audition, and I couldn't read. I didn't know any music theory, and I didn't really know any scales. But when I was in the room with the guy, you know, he would say, like, play me three octaves of the C major scale. And I'd be like, I don't really know what that means, but if you do it, I'll watch you and I'll listen, and I'm pretty confident I could do it back, you know? And so that's what happened. So we went through a barrage of different things, and it's not like it was instantaneous or anything, but I could figure it out rather quickly. And it was very clear to him that that I certainly had the chops, you know, and I certainly had an ear for rhythm and dynamics and phrasing, and, you know, because I could mimic exactly what he was doing, but I didn't have the mental connection of all the things you see me preach online and on my website, right? And that's why I preach them. That's why I preach learning a practical approach to music theory, and stop, you know, the track a lot of times to point very simple, obvious things out, like the 9 is the 5th of your 5 chord. Just remember it forever. You know what I mean? Like the 9 is the 5th of your 5 chord. You know, that it the 6 is the 3rd of your 4 chord. The 6 is your 4. Like they like just remember that. So I remember each one of those little light bulbs taking years to light up. And for so many people, it's the opposite. They might have a really great ear for harmony and melody, right? But then they really struggle with rhythm, especially anything shuffle triplet based, right? It's just like they really struggle. And everybody's got different struggles or whatever. So I teach, and what you see in the video, what you see me portray, is somebody who is very confident on their instrument. Very, very, like it feels like a part of me. Like I've done the 10 or 20,000 hours. Like it seems very fluid because it is, you know, that part has always been there, but you're seeing somebody who fought, over a decade to put it gently, from being a student to then teaching for another 7 years after that, to get to a point where I feel so confident about what's important in a song and these key takeaways from a practical playing approach, that it seems that it just seems like it's effortless because I've fought for that conviction. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. And for anyone who maybe has a tougher time, continuing in those moments of difficulty and persevering, because it sounds to me like maybe you've had times where, you know, you had difficulties and continuing, and something happened that made you want to continue. Could you talk about some of the things that have helped you when you felt maybe you wanted to give up?
Well, there's a few things. I mean, one is obviously ego, you know, where it's like, when you've done something your whole life and you feel like that is the one place where you're in control and that's where you're supposed to be, and you feel like that's where the power is in your life, like in your hands. Like when you know it's kind of up to you and you know you can do it, that's really the thing. If you quit for too long or enough time goes by, you just eat yourself up. You just eat yourself up. And so the one main struggle of my lifetime has been to make those times short, you know, and to realize that it's me putting up the wall, and the wall doesn't exist on its own. If from a practical approach, I would say that guitar players, myself certainly, have a couple what do you call it? Not idios. You can say an idiosyncrasy or like a stereotype, right? Where we are very, very much creatures of rhythm and creatures of harmony. And we basically never learn the melody to songs that we learn. And that is the opposite, of course, as like a horn player, you know, or, you know, anybody else that, or sings. There's people that play single notes first. You start with melodies. I mean, you literally start with, you know, songs you can sing, and then you figure out the chords underneath them. And the rhythm isn't an afterthought, but it's certainly taught, like, kind of, like, as far as being tight on it. That's like a tertiary kind of thing. And so guitar players have this syndrome where we learn the exact guitar part of the song. We don't really learn the other parts. We don't learn the melody. And we have because we can do it with shapes, we don't really spend the time learning why something sounds good or why we like something. And so therefore we can't take it and use it in other places, right? That is a guitar player thing. And so one thing that completely changed my life, is I got to, and being in a heavy working cover band did this for me, is I got into the habit of putting equal emphasis on rhythm, harmony, and melody, and learning the melody to every song that I learned on guitar, not just the guitar parts, learning all the parts. And what that did is it taught me that hooks, you know, things that get stuck in people's head, you know, that they can't get out of, that they can't get it out. Those are made up. Like, it takes all the pieces to kind of make that. And there's a beauty in that simplicity. And I've been kind of on that hunt for the inside ever since then, where I find myself increasingly less and less concerned with the guitar parts and how the melody, regardless who's playing it, is kind of making that rhythm part work, you know? And so for anybody out there, especially guitar players, you find yourself like you really haven't done something new in a long time, completely switch your thing. Start learning the melody to some of your favorite songs. And when you go to take a lead, play the vocal melody, and you'll find that the answers to basically all your questions are within.
No, that's great advice. And it actually points to something that I wanted to ask you, which is when, I mean, obviously the podcast is called Unlocking the Keys, and it's not just for keyboardists, but always like to loop something keyboard focused in if we can. And wanted to ask you, what sorts of things do you think keyboardists could take from this sort of advice? And what kinds of things do you think musicians can learn from each other in general?
You know, keyboards are interesting, man, because you're essentially playing a percussive instrument. You know what I mean? You're not bending, sliding, you're not playing a fretted or fretless instrument. It's not like it's, I don't really know how to phrase this. All I can tell you is that the great keyboardists that I've had, you know, the pleasure of playing with, I mean, they know their tunes inside and out better than anyone. You know, they really get chord movement and things like that. They really truly deeply get voice leading and how the melody connects the different triads. And it's like, cause you can see it. Cause you can just see it. I it's so funny you asked this. I've never in my life thought, oh man, keyboardists should really work on this. Cause there's so many things guitar players need to work on, or bass players, or even drummers. But as far as musicians in general go, you know, obviously the number one thing is just listening. And I think musicians outside of percussionists, obviously, have this constant feeling of what should I play? What would be great? What chord, what note, whatever, instead of when should I play? You know, whenever I find myself too busy or not syncing in with the rest of the band for whatever reason, I always take my hands off and I try to think to myself, okay, like, where is there a spot for me? Like, literally, where is there a rhythmic spot that I fit in? And what would that attack be like? Like, think like percussion first, and then let's think about, you know, whether I'm playing one notes or two notes or a triad or whatever it is. That's like the best advice as far as just broad musicianship goes. Is just be a good listener on like where there's actually room for you.
Wow. That is so both funny and awesome that pretty much every person that I've asked that question to on Unlocking the Keys so far has answered it in pretty much that same way. I mean, maybe some paraphrasing here or there, but really that's the answer that so many people have given. I mean, I think of a good, very dear friend of mine, Alex Wasili, who is in a band called Dumps the Funk, and was on the podcast last week and discussed about how one of the founding members of Dumps the Funk, Ivan Neville, has a masterclass that he offers that is all about what times you shouldn't be playing, when not to play. And I love the way that you just put it, which is, you know, the saying that it's not only when can you play, but when should you play? Meaning that there are times where you might be able to play, but you should hold back, that you maybe just shouldn't play.
Dude, no, and it's just true. In classical music, it's obvious. You know, you have whole sections of the orchestra where there's just rest for minutes. You know what I mean? Like, it's a thing. It's just so clear that not everybody needs to be playing all the time. That's just an obvious thing. But there's something that happens in a band in Western music, for lack of a better term, where we feel like we're good players. We have to, like, good playing means you have to be playing something always. Like now that is truer in the smaller band you get in, right? But once you get past kind of the power trio, then even then, you know, you can just let the bass and drums play and not hold anything down for a verse, right? It's just a universal truth. Like, just because you're a great player doesn't mean you have to be playing. I mean, some of the greatest players ever, one of their best skills is understanding where there should be silence. I mean, that's how many great songs, how many great speeches, you know, would never have the punchline if there wasn't like a 20-second pause before it. You know, like it's absolutely essential to being a great musician, to understanding the importance of silence.
And, you know, I love that you, right there, that you use the analogy of a speech. I've never thought about that, how some of these things that we're discussing, the idea of, you know, rests and pauses and when to, you know, play, or in the case of a speech, maybe when to be verbose, when not to be, that a lot of these things are universal, not only across genre, but across art form entirely. I mean, that's just so poignant.
Yeah, it is. And because you have to remember, what you're really trying to do is keep attention and drive something home, right? And that is really the point of punctuation, you know? And that exists not just in the spoken word, but obviously in music and any type of art like that, in dance or anything. You know, there's you don't crescendo, you know, without everything it takes to get to that point. It's all part of it.
And that is so cool, because that is exactly when I had the idea for this podcast, Unlocking the Keys. I wanted it to not only be about keyboards, but unlocking the keys to music. And at this level, really just art, that I hoped hearing from individuals such as yourself who have been through it, who have done the work, who have gone through this musical journey, and have, you know, made it to a place where they're doing music all the time and living and breathing it, the advice that you would have for some of us, you know, such as myself, or really, you know, those maybe even younger, to hear and to learn and to soak in. Because, you know, I mean, even sometimes I think I just turned 30, and I think sometimes I'm like, am I too late? Is the life of a, you know, gigging musician, doing all of the touring and everything, is that for somebody in their 20s? You know, maybe I missed the boat. These are thoughts that I have sometimes. And I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say that. You know, sometimes I'm like, when it comes to music, I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, am I on borrowed time?
No, dude, it's honestly, I mean, you know, the truth. The truth is that the time is relative. It really has nothing to do with you being 30. It has everything to do with it being 2021. You know, look at Rick Beato, look at Tim Pierce, you know, they're, you know, a good 20 some years, or 15 or so, older than I am. Right. But they found their, new career, whatever, at approximately the same time, because that's when this, kind of came to fruition. That's when this came to maturity. I mean, you have to remember, like, when I started in 2013, Facebook wasn't an ad platform. I think Instagram was like a year old. YouTube, I can't even remember if it had ads or not, but I don't think so yet. it still took an hour to upload something. No one was watching anything on their phones, certainly not in HD and certainly not in 4K. Live streaming was not a thing. The term influencer was not a thing. There was not all these things that we think of being so obvious now. There was none of that. So once those things started becoming mainstream in 2016, 17, whatever, somewhere in there, then you saw people from all walks of life who had the skill set, who were true believers, who did the work, find success for them and in the way that worked for them. And so that's really what to focus on. Not that you're 30. It's that it's time.
I certainly hope so, man. I mean, really, really encouraging words for all of us.
Dude, think about, you know, and I do think about this a lot. How many of the bands that we just cherish and adore, like the biggest bands of all time, you listen to a lot of them talk, and a lot of them in the late 50s, early 60s, or whenever it was genre related, they were just the ones that were there with the skill set, with the drive, doing it at that time. And it wasn't this big, huge thing that it is now. Just like people who first got into radio and radio just got going, right? People that got early into TV or early into movies when things got out. Now it's like this thing was like, okay, this is a 50-year industry, right? These are, how could you ever break in, right? Well, that's what's happening here on the internet and social media, or however you want to explain it, which, like, you know, we're in like year, you know, maybe 15, you know, from ground zero. You know, like, when was Facebook started? Like 2000, like 4 or 5, right? So we're at like essentially ground, we're 15 years in an industry that is going to span my life, my kids' life, my grandkids' life, guaranteed. So it might seem late, but dude, we are fortunate to be alive right now. It is just the beginning.
Yeah, man. I mean, it really, really seems that way. And especially like in your own personal musical career, it seems like things are just really starting to blossom for you. And but I know that this is, one, only the beginning, but also that it took a long time to get here. And so I'd like to ask if you could name maybe one or even a couple of your most rewarding experiences musically thus far, what would those be?
There's a few. The recent one with Umphreys was tremendous, because that really was a full circling of my life. That, like, to have the internet and the people around it get me on stage with the band of that caliber, and for them to, you know, treat me as friends and as, you know, music equals, it's like, it's one of the most amazing things that happened to me in my life. One before that, you know, countless gigs that are memorable, you know, playing, I'm here in Baltimore, you know, playing Raven Stadium, you know, pregame, you know, for who knows how many tens of thousands of people. I mean, that's awesome. When I was in GIT, I had the honor, I was voted along with two other guitar players, three of us, to represent our graduating class at graduation, which is an unbelievably tremendous honor, because you're talking basically the best guitar players from wherever they're from. And they go there to do whatever it is they're driven to do that they think can't be done in whatever small hometown they come from, or big town, New York or wherever. And so to be voted for your peers to represent you as one of the best, you know, for graduation when everybody's family is in town and there's hundreds of guitar players in the school. That was a tremendous moment for me. That felt amazing. Those would be the most significant ones. Lots of little wins leading up to that. But, you know, the ones that always stick out into my head are the ones that, those two in particular, where it's like, I really, really feel like I earned it. And it really, really felt like, other people made it happen and felt I should be there. You know what I mean? It's an affirmation of I'm doing the right thing with my life, and look at all the support that I have.
Yeah. I mean, and you know that we know, how much, appreciation, there is for you and that you, it's funny. It's like you sent out an email the other day saying like, sorry, can't get everybody's email.
I know. And it's such a hard thing because I want to respond to everyone and people want to hear from me and people share. And if you watch the channel, you know, I read things on the air or randomly and people don't even know I'm going to do it. And it means the world to me, but I mean, I might have to get an assistant or something because it's getting, I mean, literally, man, I got like 1,000 emails last weekend.
And I think, you know, it's all love, it's all appreciation. And, you know, I actually want to back up a little bit and dive back into that story of how you came to find yourself on stage with Umphreys McGee, from them finding your videos on YouTube. And you know, if you could tell us a little bit more about that story, and also if maybe there are more collaborations that we can all be looking forward to in the future from you.
Yes. There's more with that band. And I'm hopeful that there'll be more with others now that, like, I mean, you know how it is with Umphreys, if you're a fan, and if anybody listening to this isn't aware, even if you don't like their particular music, they're held in about the highest esteem you can be held amongst touring musicians. These are incredible, incredible monsters. And so basically I did, I think, a first react on one of their videos, and they shared it on their Twitter page. And I was, it was brought to my attention, and I was like, wow, this is first time anything like this has happened. And then I did another one or two, and then somebody told me that, the bass player Stasic, was a fan, and I went on Instagram and went to his page. And sure enough, I saw that he was following me. And then I went through my DMs, which are an absolute dumpster fire, and saw that he had DM'd me, like a while ago. and so then we started talking just a little bit, and then I invited him on as a guest, on my channel to do like, to share his favorite tracks and do my whole interview style, which I asked my guests to bring a handful of live music performances to share and talk about. So it's just like maybe your dad would bring you the VHS tapes, but like, you know, we'd friends and I would get together, we'd bring DVDs, like, check this out, check this out. And people that like this generally like that. And we just hang out and we drink beers and do it like we used to, right? It's all about the music and it works great. And everybody has a good time. And so then we did that. And then I saw that Jake and some of the other guys were doing lessons. Because again, this is the pandemic. Everybody's trying different stuff. So I actually booked an hour lesson with Jake and paid for it. And it was amazing. And so we just connected. We totally connected. And I was going to actually record it and upload it, but that one platform that they used doesn't allow you to do that. It's against their terms. Anyhow, so I tried a bunch to get back a hold of Jake because we both thought it was going to be recorded and whatever, whatever. Eventually, I got a hold of him, and we did another live stream on my channel, not a lesson. And at the end of it, he just said, hey, man, when we come through town, you got to go play a song with us. And I was like, well, sure. Like, he and I totally bonded. Like, anybody that watched that interview, you can see it's like, you know, when you see one of your kind, you just get it, right? You just get it. What an amazing guy. But I never really thought it would come to fruition for two reasons. Like, one, it's just like, okay, that's a really nice thing to say, but is it actually going to happen? And two, the gig that they had booked through Baltimore had gotten canceled, but then they still had the rest of their tour, which was on. And so they found two like pop-up dates in Frederick at a drive-in. So they had made this show into this fairgrounds into a drive-in concert thing called Showtime at the Drive-In. So they booked two nights there. And I saw it and messaged him. And he's like, yeah, you still coming out? I said, well, yeah. And that happened to be when I was on vacation with my family. We were doing our beach week. And I was like, Annie, who's my wife, I was like, I gotta do this. Like, this is not going to come around again. And of course, she's awesome, like she always is, and was very supportive. She couldn't go because she didn't stay at the beach with all of our kids. So then I drove to the fairgrounds, which is like 3.5 hours from the beach, 4 hours, maybe something like that. And I get there before sound check. After sound check, because this was day two. So they sound checked day one and set everything else up. And they're all in their tour bus, but the manager's out there. And he's like, yeah, you can put your rig on the side of the stage. And I just brought a guitar and amp, you know, a tuner and a wah-wah pedal, and put it on the side there. And then I go in the tour bus, meet the guys. They were amazing. And I had Jake texted me before. He was like, so what do you want to play? And I was like, oh, I'll think about it. You know, let's just do a cover, something we all know, something that, you know, frankly, I'm not going to screw up. And when I got there, I just pulled out my phone and I just searched covers by Umphrey McGee on YouTube. And like the first one that came up was them playing Eminence Front with Jimmy Herring. And I had just done a react on Eminence Front like a month beforehand. And so I knew it. And they hadn't played it in years. But everybody just like put it up to their ear, you know, relearned it real quick, no rehearsal. And they're like, yeah, we'll pull you up at the end of the first set so that you can party in the second set and not, you know, just be waiting, you know? And I was like, deal, sold. And then this big ass storm came in and we thought the show was going to be canceled. And everybody sat, staying out of the rain for a good, 45 minutes, maybe an hour. And so then they decided to do that one long power set. And then they just called me up like maybe four songs into the power set and we did it. And then it was great. I made a whole video on it. It was awesome. It was like flying.
And I mean, watching the video was what a wonderful experience that was. And, you know, it's funny, I have myself on mute for respect, out of respect for Michael and guests on the show. But I'm just laughing up a storm here, just cracking up at some of the universals that permeate no matter what level of musicianship you're at, like whether you're, you know, you're playing smaller gigs or it sounds like even, you know, big touring bands. It's like, you know, is the gig going to be canceled because of the weather? Or like, oh, can't remember how that one part went. Let me pull out my phone and listen to it on the cell phone. I mean, that's just, that's so funny.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I mean, well, musicians have different personality types, you know that, but bands like that are fast and loose in a bunch of different genres, they kind of like winging it, you know, and they, that band in particular, loves having guests and winging it. You know, most bands really don't, like most bands are really, you know, they're like really, you know, strict to what they're going to do. And even if they do have a guest, you know, it's like someone that they really know well, it's somebody that like, has a good track record that, like, you know, they're very confident isn't going to screw it up. And so for a band like that, just to invite someone like me that from the internet where there's no like good footage. I mean, there's some, but it's very little good footage of me playing with like good audio and video live, because the vast majority of my live playing was pre, you know, this, right? And I'm holding up my, you know, my smartphone. It, you know, there's a little bit of it, but not with like good quality audio and video. And so you just don't know if someone is actually like capable or not just watching YouTube videos. Cause everybody that makes YouTube videos for the most part, isn't playing with the band. They're like in their own studio by themselves. And you probably know this, but maybe a lot of your listeners don't, that and a great deal of content creators online edit the crap out of all their stuff. And that is not how they sound in a room. Doesn't mean they're not great, but it just means like as good as their video looks and all the transitions, that's also how much editing time went into the audio side, right? Totally true. I'm not saying that that's a good or bad thing in the sense that, like, you know, what you should or shouldn't do. I'm just saying, I'm still blown away that a band of that caliber was like, yeah, we've never seen this dude play, you know, but like, we know it'll be fine. You know what I mean? I wouldn't do that.
I mean, I think in relation with you, it works because those of us who watch your videos on YouTube and have seen, you know, your course and everything, it's pretty apparent that you, you know, are playing everything on the spot. It seems, you know, very much almost, organic in a way.
Yeah, that's it. I don't edit my videos. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems, that in relation with you, it, you know, it makes sense. And with that, I actually want to ask something I like to ask everyone on the show who comes, because I think that some of the most influential experiences on us as musicians is when we can get advice from people who have been there, who are doing the thing. And so I'd like to ask Michael, if you could offer one piece of advice to aspiring musicians, young or old, maybe even like a young Michael Palmisano, what would that advice be?
I would say, listen to the quiet voice, you know, in the back of your head that you know is the voice that you should be listening to. There's so many external voices and there's so many internal voices that are negative. But I think that we all know, as artists, as creative people, as people who are motivated and driven to make something that wasn't there before, that perhaps only we can make in our way, to constantly listen to that little quiet voice in the back that is always, always competing to be heard amongst all the other noise in our lives, to just commit yourself, just like you can do more than you think you can, and just believe in yourself, double and triple down on it. Because, you know, I believe that, you know, you have family and you have like the fulfillment of potential, and they're both two sides of the same coin. And every time that I've gone away from the fulfillment of potential, from listening to that little voice that tells me that I know I'm not doing what I should be doing, I know deep in my heart what I should be doing, every time I've gone away from that, it's just, my world has had some serious disruption, and it has always made it hard for family and other things like that. So I would just say to anyone that really feels like a creative, that's really feels like they must do something with their life, to the point where it's not even a must do, it's that you can't not do, just realize that that is correct, and that is proper, and that is where your self-esteem will come from. And betting on yourself and proving to yourself that you can do it is what will enable you to continue to do it more and more and more. That your self-esteem as an artist is earned.
Wow. Wow. Thank you so much. So much for sharing that.
You're welcome. I know it's pretty deep, but that's how I feel.
No, but it's valid.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to earn it. I mean, it's true in anything, as an athlete or whatever, like, you know, or whatever you do, self-esteem is earned. You know, people who, in my experience, you know, I can only speak from my experience, but from a creative, from an artist, musician, whatever you want to call it, experience, depression, self-loathing, feelings of self-doubt come from watching you not do what you know you should be doing. You know, that's where it comes from. It comes from you watching yourself, letting time go by, knowing that you're wasting your potential. And the inverse is true. When it's really, really hard, or everyone thinks you can't do it or shouldn't do it, and you don't feel like you can do it, but you choose to get up on that stage and you do it, you choose to do that writing session, you choose to do this whatever, and then you exceed in it after 10 failures, you prove to yourself that you can and should do it. We as humans need constant, as often as possible, reaffirmation to prove to ourselves that we can and should do what we know only we can do. And it's as simple as that, but it's the battle of a lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, it's such amazing and relevant advice. Thank you so, so much.
You're welcome, man. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was going to say thank you for being here. And with that, just one more thing to ask, which is, when it comes to things in the future, that you're working on, things that you're excited about, things that we can be looking forward to. What kinds of things are on the horizon for Michael Palmisano in the coming seasons?
Well, you know, what I want to do is have this continue to come kind of full circle. I want this, and I'm feeling this very much so, to empower me and other people, but empower me to get to a place where I finally start writing and making my own music, and not just teach, but also practice what I preach. I always tell everybody that to be a well-rounded musician, student, professional, whatever, there's always like four different pillars. Like, you got to do your exercises. You know, you got to actually like follow some type of learning path, and so on and so forth. But the last one is always to create, to take all these different tools and to try to actually create something. And so I got this barn, and the focus of the barn is twofold. Is one, I got all my instruments set up. So once a week is my goal. It's been slow getting started just because I'm just so swamped, but that excuse is running thin. is to make one original a week and post it on YouTube. Maybe if it's just a minute and round, but then have lessons for it on my site, right? For students to get the multi-tracks and they can play over it, whatever. And then when bands come through town, instead of just hopefully them inviting me to sit in with them, if they can peel off a half day or a day, invite them to the barn and do kind of like a Live at Daryl's House or like a NPR Tiny Desk thing. So when people come through, they visit, we make something for the channel, free promotion for everybody. We create together, have a good time. And those are the two main things coming up. But then ultimately I would like to write. I would like to use the barn, and I would like to use this platform I've built to force myself for the first time in my life to do the thing which has scared me the most, which is actually make my own music and be willing to share it with people. That's like the final frontier for me. But you know how it is. The things that scare you the most are the things you should go towards. So I'm hoping that as this grows, I continue to grow stronger and stronger, as I feel I have been, and more motivated and inspired to face that and really start putting things out there that are truly of my own creation. And I hope to do that in this coming year. I really do.
Wow, amazing, amazing stuff to look forward to. And, you know, it sounds like there might even be a Michael Palmisano album to look forward to at some point.
I would like to do that. I mean, I've always wanted to be in a band that backs an incredible female vocalist. That's always been how I hear myself in a band setting. And so I have been writing some things that would work for that. But I haven't found the band or the singer or anything. But that's kind of what I've always wanted. I've always wanted like Derek Trucks' job. I've always wanted to be in a killer band backing a killer female vocalist and just serve the song. And every now and again, you know, cut some heads.
Yeah, man. Melt some faces.
You have to every now and again.
Absolutely. Well, everyone, Michael Palmisano, once again, thank you so much for being here today. It's been an absolute joy. I hope everyone listening has enjoyed themselves, and I hope that you as well, Michael, have enjoyed your time here today.
Very much so.
So glad to hear it. And Michael, just please keep up all of the amazing, inspiring work that you're doing every single day. Thank you.
Man, thank you for that. I really appreciate you. And I hope one day to meet you in person. We'll do it soon.
And there you have it. I hope you enjoyed our time with Michael Palmisano, an inspiring individual and absolutely amazing guitarist. Since this interview, Michael has continued to stay busy with regular updates to GuitarGate.com and his YouTube channel, most recently releasing a Country Guitar Fundamentals course. Sadly, the original barn was not able to be turned into the musical space that Michael was hoping to make it, due to the original owner having different visions for the property, but Michael instead went above and beyond to make his dream a reality, and has since purchased a plot of land upon which he will be building his own musical barn in the coming months. More details can be found on his YouTube channel. As always, thank you for listening, and please follow Unlocking the Keys wherever you hear podcasts for more episodes just like this, in addition to following me, Link Bradham, on social media. I hope you have a truly lovely day, evening, or whatever time frame you might find yourself in the present moment. Peace.